Good morning, and greetings in Jesus' name. God's blessing to each one of you. It's good to see you all here, and it's good to be back. I didn't miss any Sundays, but being gone with Kervin for a couple of days, it was good to be back with my family especially, and good to be here again this morning. I was blessed with being at the minister's meeting and the conference. And I know I mentioned to someone, at least, that I'm about as new to the Pilgrim Conference as I am to the state of Missouri. And so it was good to be there and meet other ministers and leaders and just share together. And I was blessed. I'd like to, this morning, look at faith in action. And as a premise, I'd like to start out with this statement. God empowers the believer as he steps out in faith. And as a way of introduction, let's turn to three scriptures. First of all, Hebrews 11, 1. Thinking about faith, Hebrews 11, 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So when you step out in faith, you don't know really what you're going to get into. It's things that are hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. The next scripture is Matthew 7. Matthew 7, verse 7. Part of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said here in Matthew 7, 7, "Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you." And the last scripture, James 1. James 1 and verse 5 and 6. James is writing here about someone who lacks wisdom, and I believe, wouldn't we all this morning say that we need that? We need wisdom. But verse 5 says, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed." And so with those scriptures to introduce this, that God empowers the believer as he steps out in faith, I'd like to look now at some examples in the Old Testament of men and women who, I believe, did this. As they believed God, they stepped out in faith. So let's turn to Genesis 16 for the first one. I'd like to look at Hagar. You remember Abraham's servant. Actually, it was Sarah's servant, her handmaid. She had a handmaid that was an Egyptian woman. And in Genesis 16 is the setting of this story. And here, God had promised Abraham and Sarah that they were going to have a son, but it wasn't happening. And so Sarah said, this was the custom of the day. Sarah said, gave Abraham her maid and to have a son. And so Abraham took Hagar, and we'll start reading at verse 5. "And Sarah said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarah, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarah dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. Now, what happened was that because Hagar conceived, she despised her mistress, Sarah, who was barren. And Sarah dealt hardly with her, and she fled from her face. Verse 7, and the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. Now, the way to Shur was the way home to Egypt for Hagar. She was running away. She was running away from her mistress. She was going to run back to Egypt. In verse 8, the angel found her, and he said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, whence comest thou? And whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarah. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress and submit thyself unto her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me. For she said, have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Hagar here saw God, and she had a personal encounter, I believe, and saw God. And I thought of Psalm 139, her faith that God saw her. And if you think about Psalm 139, it's the psalm that talks about, Lord, thou hast searched me and known me, and thou knowest my downsitting, my uprising, you know, my thoughts afar off. And where can I go to get away from you, Lord? If I go up into heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you're there. The darkness doesn't even cover me, but it's like light around me. Hagar listened. She went back to Sarah, her mistress. Verse 15, I didn't read. It says, and Hagar bare Abram a son. And Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. She did not know how this was going to work out, but she listened to God. She obeyed. And so that step of faith usually is coupled with obedience. When we step out in faith, doing what God said, it's obedience. It's a belief, it's faith that God knows best for me. Hagar did not know how this was going to work out. She thought the best thing to do was to run back to Egypt. She didn't think she could handle this. I can't handle this hard dealing that Sarah is giving me because of this. I don't know what Sarah did. But being the mistress, she was able to make it hard for her servant. Now, turn to Genesis 21. This is the next scene in Hagar's life that we know about. Again, emphasize that she did not know how this was going to work out. Genesis 21, I'll start reading verse 8. This is after Isaac was born. So we're a number of years later. It's about 14 years later. Ishmael is about 14. Isaac has just been born. He's 8 days old. Actually, this verse 8 is when he is weaned, so he was older than that, but it's when he is small. Verse 8 of Genesis 21, and the child grew and was weaned. It's talking about Isaac. And Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice. For in Isaac shall thy seed be called, and also the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now here, what do you think Hagar thought when this happened? She had gone back to her mistress. And time had moved along, and now Sarah had a son. And there was problems. Ishmael was mocking. And God told Abraham, this is what you do about it. You send Hagar away. You send her and her son away. I believe Hagar was at the place where her faith was wavering. Let's keep reading. Verse 15. And the water was spent in the bottle. That was what Abraham had given her. The water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And as she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot, for she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. Again, we see her running. She laid him under the bush. How far does a bow shot? We got some archers here, some people that are used to archery. How far can that arrow fly? Depends how high in the sky you aim it, right? But she removed herself far enough that she would not be able to see the death of the child, and she sat down and cried herself. Verse 17, and God heard the voice of the lad. God heard Ishmael. And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not. In other words, Hagar, be strong in your faith. For God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. So here was something that Hagar had to step out in faith and do. God said, you need to get up and help your son. And verse 19, and God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. And so we see that Hagar, again, learned of God not to run from the situations. See, God could see the whole picture. Hagar couldn't. And we're that way too. We don't see the whole thing. God sees right where we are now. He saw Ishmael under the bush. But he saw in the future that he was going to make a great man out of Ishmael. And his descendants were going to be great. Make him a great nation. Hagar thought the end was here. In our lives, let's don't run from the situations that God brings to us. Children, don't run from your parents. Don't run away. I'm sure we've all heard stories of teenagers, young or old, that have literally left home. They literally run away from their parents or other authority in their lives. That's not the answer. God wants you to come back and face whatever it is that he has you to go through. For adults, let's don't run from responsibilities in our lives. Maybe there's problems in your marriage. Maybe there's difficulties in your home. Let's don't run. Let's face those things. We don't see the whole picture, but God does. And when we step out in faith, he will empower us. Let's don't run from accountability. We've heard stories, people that try to run from the police. It doesn't work. not for very long. It catches up. And Jonah found out that you cannot run from God. So don't try that either. We can't run away from God. Let's look at another account. I'd like to look at Caleb and Joshua in Numbers 13. God empowers the believer as he steps out in faith. Numbers 13, this is the account of the children of Israel. They've come through the wilderness, through the Red Sea. They've gone been at Mount Sinai, and now they are just on the edge of Canaan. And God said, you sent 12 men to go search out the land. And they did that. Caleb and Joshua were two of these men. Numbers 13, verse 30. They had gotten back from the land of Canaan, and they were showing the fruit that they had found, the huge cluster of grapes that took two men to carry, and other things that they had. And they were showing this to the congregation. And they said, this is a land that's flowing with milk and honey. It's a lovely land. But there are some strong people there. And the cities are walled and great. And there's people in the mountains. There's people down by the sea. And in verse 30, Numbers 13, 30. Caleb saw where this was heading, I believe. He understood. He saw the tide turning in this report of the 12 spies. In verse 30, he said, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. He was that lone voice. Verse 31, but the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are people or men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. And let's keep reading here up to verse 10 of chapter 14. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. So here Joshua and Caleb are together now. And they're pleading with these people. Verse 8, if the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. They were pleading, but their faith was strong, and they were pleading with these people that they would also take that step. But what did they do? Verse 10, but all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. There's 2 against 10 here. Sometimes that step of faith is a lone voice for God or a minority for God. It's not easy. But well, let's look at what happened here. Let's look at the rewards and the punishments that God dealt out. And we'll see that it wasn't easy, but it's worth it. The glory of the Lord appeared above the tabernacle, and God and Moses were communing together, and God said, these men that And these people They've tempted me these 10 times. They're not going to see this land. But verse 24 of chapter 14, but my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it. Caleb received a promise there from God because of two things. It was because of the spirit, a different spirit that was in his heart. It was a spirit of faith and confidence in God. And he was willing to take that step because he believed God and believed what God said. And he was willing to stick to that. He fully followed the Lord here. Numbers 14:30. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land. God's talking to children of Israel, concerning which I swear to make you dweller in, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. God said the whole generation from 20 years old and upward, you're going to die in the wilderness, except for these two men. On top of that, verse 14, 36, or chapter 14, verse 36, and the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. So Caleb and Joshua had a confirmation right at this point that they had been rewarded of God. They received a promise. The other 10 died. And there were some more that died because they got it into their heads that they're going to go anyway. And Moses and Aaron didn't leave and the ark didn't depart, but they went up into the hill and were defeated by the Amalekites and the Canaanites. But in spite of all this, in spite of the promise that Caleb and Joshua received, they still had to go with these people for 40 years. 40 years. Think about your age now. Add 40 years onto it. That's what they were looking at, and they knew it. Because God said, as many days as you search the land, which was 40 days, that's how many years you're going to wander in the wilderness. So they knew what the number was. It was a big number. So what happened in these 40 years, Caleb and Joshua? We know Joshua was the leader who succeeded Moses. But Caleb, we don't hear much about him. But 45 years later, Joshua 14, you can turn to that. Joshua 14, 6 to 8. They're in the land of Canaan. And here we see Caleb again. Joshua 14:6. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal. And Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. Here were these two old men. Well, they were older than everyone else anyway. The rest of them had all died. And I like the way Caleb says that. He's going back to that promise that God gave to Caleb and Joshua. And then he gives us some more information. Verse 7, 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. So here was 40-year-old Caleb. He was one of the spies. And now he's 45 plus 40. He's 85 now. Verse 8, nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. Okay, he's talking about how it was 45 years ago and what happened. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land whereupon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. Now here's what happened in the 40 years. Verse 10, and now behold, the Lord hath kept me alive as he said, He's 40 and 5 years. Even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, and yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. So Caleb said, this is what happened. God has preserved me these 40 years. I haven't lost my vigor in life. I'm as strong as I was then. And so, how did he keep that through all those years? I thought of Psalm 92. Because of the last couple of verses in the psalm. But Psalm 92, I doubt if it was written in Caleb's time. I don't know when it was written. I did not research it. But I just think this must have been Caleb's motto. To keep him going through 40 years, I'm going to read it. It is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High, to show forth thy loving kindness in the morning and thy faithfulness every night. That must have been Caleb's daily exercise to keep his faith through those years. Upon an instrument of 10 strings and upon the psaltery, upon the harp with a solemn sound. For thou, Lord, hast made me glad through thy works. I will triumph in the works of thy hands. So Caleb triumphed over his disappointment, having to wander 40 years. He triumphed over probably impatience. You know, here I am, I've got to stay with this group until all the rest of these people die. He said, I will triumph in the works of thy hands. I'm putting these words in Caleb's mouth, which is probably not the case, but I think this must have had to have been his attitude. Verse 5, O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. When the wicked spring as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. So his love and adoration for God was there, and he nurtured it every day in spite of the wickedness that was around him. Verse 9, for lo thine enemies, O Lord, for lo thine enemies shall perish, all the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. But my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. Mine eye shall see my desire on mine enemies, and mine ears shall hear my desire of the wicked that rise up against me. So he's expressing his faith. I think he expressed his faith through the years that God was going to keep his promises. And then verse 12 to 15, these are the verses that drew me to this passage. Verse 12 says, the righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. Shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. To show that the Lord is upright, he is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. That's what carried Caleb through, was his confidence in God. He is upright. There's no unrighteousness. He's going to keep his promise. And so he was productive in his old age at 85. He said, now you can turn back to Joshua 14 if you would like to. He said to Joshua, verse 12, he says, now, therefore, give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day. That's the mountain that Caleb had walked on himself. And Moses said, Caleb, wherever you walk, that's going to be part of your inheritance. So Caleb said, give me this mountain. And he went and conquered it with his family. He gave it to his family. So let's don't get weary in through the years in our lives. Let's don't get weary. Let's keep our faith strong. But we have to have a daily exercise of praise, a daily trusting in God, a daily claiming God's promises. A daily stepping out in faith another day. That we be like Caleb. let's look at Rahab. Joshua, back in the book of Joshua, chapter 2. You know the story about Rahab. She's the woman that hid the spies when Joshua sent two spies across Jordan, and they went to spy out Jericho. And of course, they got into the city, but the city was alerted that there's two spies here from the Israelites, and they were going to try to catch them. Rahab hid them on the roof of her house. Joshua 2:9, she's talking, and she said unto the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that your terror has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when ye came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. You hear what she's saying? She's acknowledging the God of Israel, that he is the God. God in heaven above and in earth beneath. And she has just a little bit of faith. Just a little bit. And she says, verse 12, Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that ye will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token, and that ye will save alive my father, my mother, and my brethren, and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. That was her little bit of faith right there. She's asking. And what did these two men, I wonder what they thought. What are we going to do? I wonder what Joshua would say about this. Should we make this deal with her? She had saved them alive. She had showed them kindness. And they said, verse 14, And men answered her, Our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. And it shall be when the Lord hath given us the land that we will deal kindly and truly with thee. And they went on to tell her what she should do. She let them down through the window on the scarlet cord. And they said, Now you tie this in the window. You bind it in the window. When we come into the land, that's going to be the sign to us that you've kept your part of the bargain. And we'll keep ours. Verse 21, And she said, According unto your words, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet line in the window. So she stepped out. She stepped out in faith. Did she know how it was going to work out? No, not at all. She had no idea the walls were going to come crumbling down. Her house was on the wall. I don't have on my notes here, but the next chapter. So I didn't write the references down here. Where Jericho fell. It's in chapter 6. Oh yeah, I do have it here. Chapter 6, verse 17. It says, Joshua's talking. He says, And the city shall be accursed, even it, and all that are therein to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, and she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And it was always hinged on that. It was that kindness that she had showed. That was what the bargain was made on, and that showed her faith in the God of Israel. She was willing to hide those men instead of delivering them up to her own people. She could have lost her life, I believe, in that, if she would have been found out, no doubt. It would have been considered treason. But she exercised her faith in that. And in every reference from here on through the Bible, it's always connected with that, that she hid the spies. And that's why she was justified. In James, the book of James 2:25, it says that she was justified by her works when she hid the spies. And so there it was, faith in action. Now, what became of Rahab? What became of Rahab in Israel? Verse 25 of chapter 6, and Joshua says, "And Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive and her father's household and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho." What became of Rahab? Do you know anything about Rahab's descendants? Anyone know? Who are some of Rahab's descendants? Do we know? Anyone?
Esther.
How was that?
Esther.
Esther? It could be. I can't say for sure. David. Right. So she was David's great-great-grandmother. Isn't that wonderful how God blessed her? She's in the line of Jesus in Matthew 1. She's in the Jesus genealogy. She was Boaz's mother. And so she left. She was a Canaanite with a Canaanite background. But because of her step of faith, she left a legacy of faithfulness among God's people that we know about today. So it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter if you're a Canaanite with a Canaanite background and Canaanite relatives. You can leave a legacy of faithfulness if you step out in faith. God empowers the believer as he steps out in faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Ask, and it shall be given. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. I've got too many people on my list here. I see the clock's at 11:30. I'd like to look at Nehemiah yet. And you can turn to Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2. These first couple people that we looked at were individuals. They made individual choices. Nehemiah was an individual also, but he was a leader. And he influenced a whole group of people because he stepped out in faith. We'll just look at a couple of verses here. You know the story of Nehemiah, how He was in the Shushan, the palace in Persia, and some of the Jews had already gone back after the 70 years exile, had already gone back to Jerusalem, and they were there at Jerusalem. But there was nothing happening with the city of Jerusalem. It was still in rubbish, just like it had been after the Babylonians destroyed it. In fact, it was a lot worse than that, having sat there for 70 years. And so Nehemiah asked permission of the king to go to see what he could do. And he had supplies from the king. And he gets to Jerusalem and he does some, does a little checking around at night by himself with him and his servant. And after that, and he surveyed the walls and how they were broken down. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 16, he gets the rulers together. And verse 17, he says, "Then said I unto them, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire." So Nehemiah was facing the facts. The brutal facts was that there was desolation everywhere. The Babylonians had destroyed the city. And whatever wood was there, I guess, in the walls and in the gates was burned. And so there just was rubble left. But Nehemiah says in verse 17, "Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach." Verse 18, "Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work." So Nehemiah, having gone through the proper channels, was able to lead these men But he had some opposition. Verse 19, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then I answered them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we his servants will rise and build, but ye have no portion nor right nor memorial in Jerusalem. Nehemiah said this the whole way through. He talked exactly like this and kept his faith strong. But the opposition didn't go away. It stayed right there. And so chapter 3 says, then Elishab the high priest rose up with his brethren the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. And the whole chapter is just talking about all the men and their families that got into it, started working, started repairing, started building the wall. And by chapter 4, this really, of course, stirred up the indignation of Sanballat and his friends. But Nehemiah did not spend 1 minute trying to convince them to get on there, to get in help. He didn't try to even spend time going and having meetings with them, which they wanted him to do. But he simply committed it to God every time. Verse 4 of chapter 4 says, hear, O our God, for we are despised and turn their reproach upon their own head. Give them for a prey in the land of captivity, and cover not their iniquity. And let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Nehemiah spent zero energy on trying to fight these men. He just simply encouraged the ones that were with him, and he kept at it. He didn't quit. Nehemiah was plagued, I'm sure, by fear. And Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 9 says, for they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. So there we have Nehemiah again coming back to God. He's always laying this out, these things that the people were bringing against him. They tried to mock him. They tried to threaten with a letter they were going to send to the king. They tried to get Nehemiah to come meet in the temple right in Jerusalem. And he didn't do that either. He saw that they were just trying to distract him from this. Nehemiah just kept right on working. And we get to chapter 6, verse 15 and 16. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, in 52 days. 52 days they had the wall built. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. You know, as a group, I was at the meetings this week, and was blessed to see, you know, God working in our conference. And it's not that we're some perfect conference, but we have leaders that are willing to follow the Bible, and they're willing to keep working. They're not giving up. And in our congregation, let's follow that. Let's follow Nehemiah's example of not giving up. Continue on with the work of building. This is the Church of Jesus Christ. And as we step out in faith, he will empower us. Jesus said, I will build my church. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. Well, we have to be willing not to run away like Hagar did. This verse I'll close with. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. And That is a necessary ingredient in this process of stepping out in faith. So may God bless each one of you, and let's be faithful. Not lose our faith, but every day take courage like Caleb did. Let's kneel for prayer.